Let's start off the episode with some great news. Well, I wouldn't call it great. I call it a bunch of bullshit, if you ask me. And that's the NASDAQ, and really just the stock market in general. You know, if you look at the last, which depends on when you want to say we started paying attention to COVID-19 in this country, let's say the last 3 months. Let's be nice and say the last 3 months. If you look at the last 3 months, we've lost 33 million jobs, shattering records even from the Great Depression, the Great Recession. And here we are with no end in sight. I don't care if the economy is opening up or not. Why? Well, the government is doing a hell of a job, whether that's Trump, whether that's governors, whether that's mayors, doesn't really matter. They're doing their best to try to supply the services, to try to supply the products. But they're forgetting about the other side of the equation, and that's the demand. We don't have the demand coming. People don't feel comfortable to spend money. People don't feel comfortable to go out without worrying about getting sick. And I think just that whole concept of the demand side, we're not just going to get, yeah, people are going to get back to work. To work? Sure. To do what? For who? When? So all that said, we've got job losses. We've got no end in sight. And when things are going to, it's not like a lot of things. It's not just the idea that the objective nature of it, the fact that we're open back up. It's the feeling or emotional aspect of it. And that can't be ignored. How soon are people feel like they can go out, have a nice dinner, go out to a concert, go out to a game, go out anywhere? Can you go out to eat with a mask on? How does that work? Are you going to be sitting in pods? It's a mess. So we've lost 33 million jobs. If you go back, you know what? Let's go back even further. Right now, let's start with the Dow. It doesn't really matter. All these numbers are inflated by the Fed anyway. It's all trash. It's all fake news, right? If you want to go back, let's go back to 3 months ago. Let's go back 2 months. The Dow was around 25,000. That was before all the job losses. That was before all the job losses. So we're going back 8 weeks. March 10th, the Dow closed at just above 25,000. The Dow closed at 24,331 on Friday, after 33 million jobs have been lost in that time span, shattering all records. I mean, listen, I don't know what the hell is going on, but I can tell you that the markets, Wall Street, is completely detached from the reality in which people are living. Our government, the media, has done nothing but focus on really vanity metrics. There are no metrics that you turn on your TV and look at that actually apply to the average individual. Other than this, there are no, put it like this, besides the job loss, like the unemployment numbers that come out, they focus on the Dow, they focus on NASDAQ and the S&P, maybe the gold price, even crypto. Because crypto is still a luxury good to a lot of people. Oh, and oil, right? But what they don't do is present anything that matters to the average person. What are the metrics there? The average person, I think the stat is 85% of all stocks or financial assets, I think of all stocks, and that includes IRAs and 401ks, 85% are owned by the top 10%. But that gets beat into our head all the time. So like I said, the government and media has only focused on everything related to the markets, to the stock markets. And then they scream about the unemployment rate, which they should, but they never scream about the discrepancy and why we've had already $6 trillion in 2 months go towards the stock market. And all everybody else got was, you know, we're $1,200 checks and maybe some people are getting unemployment. Uber's laying people off. Lyft, a lot of people are getting laid off. We're not back to normal anytime soon. And meanwhile, we got Nancy Pelosi, who's, listen, I don't know if she doesn't care, feels like she's untouchable, but I don't know if you saw this news. The next bailout, which I can't tell if it's the fourth or fifth bailout or sixth bailout at this point, they want to actually bail out corporate lobbyists. So the guys who write these crappy bills that the majority of us have to live under, because we know, really, if you want the reality of it, nobody in the Senate, nobody in the House really writes these bills. It's the lobbyists that writes these bills. You remember, I don't know if, you know, if you think about corporate America or even a recommendation letter. We've all been there. Someone who you want to give you a recommendation. Sometimes they tell you to write the recommendation. Sometimes your boss says you write the email. I'll send it. Well, in this scenario, lobbyists, they write a lot of our bills. So I guess that's why Nancy Pelosi feels that they need to be bailed out. They need to be bailed out. I think this is sick and it's despicable. And I'm telling you to start paying attention. This next bill is going to be a mess. That one bill, the $2 trillion bill, that was a mess. It was nothing but a giveaway to the largest corporations, the ones that have been improperly handling their books and their business and taking risks with buybacks, not reinvesting, not having money back on their balance sheet. That's what that was for. This one is going to be more of that because more businesses are getting into trouble, but what they should be doing is giving it to the more of a focus on small business, more of a focus on the individual, but they're not going to do that. Yeah, they might bail out the states, but why are we bailing out these corporate lobbying groups? You know, one of the days I'm going to do an episode on how do we fix America. And I can tell you top three in my list got to be top two on that list, right next to term limits for everyone in Washington. And and that goes not just for the president who already has them. I'm talking for senators, people in the House, and this is going to sound crazy, the Supreme Court and other federal courts. But outside of that, I think the next thing is lobbying money, any kind of money. We've got to cut that out. But you see this sort of sick game where somehow these lobbyists now need bailed out. That's insane to me. Completely insane. You know, we have a $25 trillion national debt right now. 25. I don't know if that number even matters anymore. It was like 22 when Trump started, maybe 23, I can't even remember. But we've added like 2 to 3 trillion, I swear, in the last 3 months. And we say, oh, that's money we owe ourselves, or oh, we'll pay it back. We're never paying that back. We've got two options. We're either going to inflate that money away, okay, which means that essentially we have to print more money to cover the money that we already printed, as stupid and crazy as that sounds. That's what we're going to have to do. Or we default on it. We're not going to default on it. I think a lot of the pivot comes between, it's something very inherent and core, is that when you loan money into existence, even if you're loaning it to yourself, once again, as crazy as that sounds, when you loan money into existence, it's different than spending money into existence. The difference there is we can loan money even to ourselves. It sort of has a built-in inherent that what I'm loaning you has value. If I loan you, if I have a bunch of rocks and I loan you these rocks, then somehow if you agree to take them, that I'm loaning, you have to give me the rocks back. There's some placed or implied value on that. And that little sort of transaction is not the right word. That little sort of scenario is what gives our value money, our money value. So I'm telling you, just this national debt is going to keep growing. It's nothing but just, once again, like a lot of things that you see on TV is, oh, we got to worry about the national debt. It's a convenient worry. The Republicans worry about it when the Democrats want to do something. The Democrats worry about it when the Republicans want to do something. And they both worry about it when the people actually want something. Okay? So keep that in mind. I'm going to keep reporting on it. If they start bailing out lobbyists in the next bill, I mean, that's some sort of really sick, sick game. And I can tell you right now, this stimulus bill that's coming, it's going to be like a fentanyl dose. And why I say that is it's going to get us very hooked on cheap printed money. And I think this time they're going to have to actually do something for people. They should have done that the first couple times and not given all that money to the corporations. They should have given it to people. If you would have taken $6 trillion and given it to the, you know, working people. So let's assume, and I'm just sort of pulling numbers out of the air right now, $6 trillion, and you divide it by, I think the number of working people is like 180 million people. You have 33, just around $33,000. Now you tell me, facing a crisis, do you think it would have been better to just send everybody? And I mean, none of that means tested bullshit that you get from Democrats all the time. Okay. If you would have just taken $33,000 and sent it to every working person and said, this is what you're going to get for the rest of the year, as we sort of try to make our way through this pandemic, I think if you're going to be giving money to people, you give it, if you're going to be printing money, what you need to do is give it directly to the people, not corporations, because those people are going to use that to pay their bills. People are going to use that to, maybe some aren't even in a bad situation, are going to use that to maybe invest. You go bottom up. We've been going top down for decades, trickle down or not. We've been going top down for decades. We need to go bottom up. Okay. So my concern now is they're going to give out this next stimulus bill is going to be huge. I think we're going to get news this week coming up, either Monday or Tuesday. Schumer was saying that we're going to give, it's going to be huge. I'm guessing maybe even 6 to 7 trillion by itself, this bill. And we're going to maybe start giving people money monthly. Maybe it's $2,000 a month. I'm sure there'll be means testing attached to that. And if you don't know what means testing is, instead of just giving it to everybody, you create these sort of hoops and steps for people to qualify to get any sort of money from the government. And I'll tell you why that's stupid. Because the effort to jump through those hoops is often not worth it at all to the people. And it's certainly not, it hurts the execution and implementation of it. And it assumes a lot about everyone's scenario. So I've always been against any sort of means testing. You know, if someone's getting, let's just say, if someone got $2,000 a month, all right, for someone that's making $4,000 a month, $5,000 a month, $2,000 a month is a lot of money. You're talking anywhere from 40 to 50% increase If that's if you're still working. Okay. But if you're making a lot of money, say you're making $100,000 a month. You're making $1 million, over $1 million a year, right? What's $2,000 a month? Who cares? Who cares? I don't even care if that person gets it. Get people the money. Let them figure out what they want to do. So we're sort of like teetering on this whole UBI concept. And when I say fentanyl dose, I mean like we're going to get hooked on this and we're not going to be able to get off of it. And we're going to have to keep printing money because they're never going to balance the budget to support this. And let them let people have this for even 6 months. By the time this bill passes, it might be June. It sure as hell will be July before people get any of this new money that they're talking about. If they get anything decent, if they don't keep giving it to all the large corporations who mismanage their companies. Or even the governments, the state and local governments, which mismanage their money as well. I mean, I saw some stats on Chicago or Illinois as a whole. I mean, my goodness, talk about mismanagement. They've got, what, bus drivers making $100,000? Nothing against bus drivers. Everybody plays their part in the economy. A bus driver making $100,000, just, I don't know. It just feels like a lot of people should be making $100,000 then. So this fentanyl UBI dose that we're going to get, say people get it for 6 months and they say, we're going to pay it through the end of the year. What happens when you take people off of that and they've been accustomed to that $2,000 a month, means tested or not? What's going to happen? You're going to have a revolt in your hands. So we're going to have to keep printing money on every yearly budget to support that habit. That's going to add to our national debt. That's going to add to inflation. Play that forward. More national debt, more inflation, more national debt, more inflation. Then you got to print more money to cover the debt, the interest on the debt. To me, you know, I saw something the other day about it was a pie chart and it showed our national debt. First of all, it was obviously old because it said it had $22 trillion. We're at 25 now, over $25 trillion. And the funny part of that whole thing was they had the nerve to separate the U.S. Treasury and a Federal Reserve. as if they're two entities and not in cahoots and working together. The Federal Reserve creates money out of nowhere, and now we owe it to them based on nothing? I mean, come on. People got to start waking up. Our production is being stolen with all this printed money. We really got to start getting people to educate, to become educated about the most basics of money. Everybody. I made a Facebook post once and I said, do you know where our money comes from? And people thought, you know, it was backed by gold. Money's backed by gold. And I'm going to have to plug Mike Maloney's the Hidden Secrets of Money series again. If you haven't seen it, watch it. Please watch it. And you will be like, oh my God. People need to understand how our money is created. So when you see the media talking about the national debt, you know it's BS. It's BS because they're printing this money out of nothing, and that's not a good thing. That's an awful thing. But don't let them tell you we can't have nice things because we have some limited supply of money. We just spent $6 trillion and we didn't budget for that. I think I saw something that it was $3 trillion deficit already in the first quarter. What the hell? You know? And, you know, I saw this pie chart and it had U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve. And it's just, It's such a joke. It's such a joke. This is not the money system we need to be trying to form businesses under, living our lives under, saving under. And, you know, this is a horrific system. When money is printed, your production and your time is being stolen from you. There is no other way to put it. None. How do I know that? Well, if there's a certain supply of money, and that supply, let's say it increases by 10% in 2-3 years, which is probably true, right? 15%, 10-15% in even a year or two. Well, what once cost you $100 may cost you $115. Well, how do you get that as extra $15 to make up the difference? Well, you have to work longer. How do you work longer? Spend more time. Like I said, the Federal Reserve and the current monetary system is literally stealing from you and everyone you know. And it's only benefiting the very small but select few who are at the top, who are benefiting from being closest to the faucet. And that's the Cantillon effect. It's either Cantillon or Cantillon effect. Essentially, the cost of money is cheapest the closer you get to the source of money. The banks get the money from the Federal Reserve at now like 0%, 1%. Well, look at your credit card statement. Look at your mortgage statement. Look at your car loan statement. Look at your personal loan statement. I guarantee you, yeah, you might have got a promo for 6 months or some special deal. Some people, 0%, 1%. But ultimately, I know your credit cards are in the teens, maybe even in the 20%. Even with good credit, you're paying 3 to 4% on a home. And that's with 20% down today. What is that? That bank might have paid nothing for that, especially now that they've gotten rid of the reserve limit. Banks can just loan money they don't even have reserve on. It used to be a horrible 10%. Now it's nothing per the stimulus bill 2 months ago. Just something else terrible that the media doesn't talk about. So we need a new monetary system. What could that be? Well, let's talk about crypto now, right? The Bitcoin halving is coming up. Big hyped Bitcoin halving. And I will be the first to tell you that's a bunch of nonsense, at least for Bitcoin. We have to start doing a better job of separating Bitcoin and crypto. I notice a lot of times in comments, whether it's on Twitter, YouTube, wherever, I say crypto, people assume I mean Bitcoin. I actually definitely don't mean Bitcoin, because the Bitcoin is nothing but vanity and marketing now. That's it. The use case is down to a store of value. It's down to being digital gold, which is not even a use case in 2020. It wasn't a use case really in 2010. Because the entire concept of gold as money is archaic and old. If we were starting from scratch today, you can't make me think for a second. If we were starting from scratch with the technology we have, which is essentially what crypto's proposition is, that the technology we have, we can form a better monetary system and thus a better economy for everybody. You can't tell me that starting from scratch today, somebody would say, well, yeah, we need to use something gold back. No, we wouldn't. So the entire concept of gold says, oh, it's going to be gold backed. Well, now that we have this technology with blockchain technology, encryption, decentralized networks, some are uncensorable, privacy, these things are iterating and getting better and better every day. We don't need gold backed. So when Bitcoin says it's digital gold, it's like a digital concept of something we don't need. Bitcoin has lost the narrative of being money. And no one can, until I see protocol improvements to Bitcoin, you're not going to convince me for a second that Bitcoin wants to be money or it even can be money. There are no smart contracts. There are no oracles. There is no form of governance. There are no tokens. You can't build an economy on Bitcoin. So all this halving stuff is just pure hype. It's hype on an archaic proof of work sort of model. I'm fine with proof of work. It can continue fundamentally. We need to move on from that to something else. I can get into the whole concept of why proof of work and proof of stake are fundamentally really not different. Value in, value out. It's that simple. And no one's talking about, to me, the one outcome from the halving is you're essentially taking the block reward and reducing it 50%. So you already have an industry, I think it's like 70% of hash power is like 5 mining pools. So now, and then the remaining 30% is smaller individuals, smaller mining farms, things like that. So now you're going to take away 50% of their revenue. Yes, that's going to relieve some sell pressure, but it's going to also put a lot of miners out of business. So the very likely outcome is you're going to have centralized mining. I wouldn't be surprised that if by early 2021, we have 3 mining pools that hit 85-90%. And people are going to tell you Bitcoin is decentralized. And it is, depending on how you look at it, like any coin. There's multiple layers of decentralization. That's another talk for another time I'll do. The entire concept that there's a decrease in supply, somehow that gives it inherent scarcity, is not really a value proposition. The value proposition of cryptocurrency is first and foremost transparency. Trustlessness and transparency. Why? Because it's not that Bitcoin's inflation rate is going down because there's less blocks being produced and thus less Bitcoin being produced. I mean, it's not that the same number of blocks. It's more so that the block reward is going down. So there's less Bitcoin to sell. It's not that the scarcity is the big deal. It's that you know. We know when the halving is because of the transparency. We know how many coins there are. We know how many there we can project in the future based on block rewards and block times. It's no different for any other coin, the majority of other coins. So there's no benefit to just this halving scarcity concept. Oh, it's scarce. Who cares? With no real use case, store value, digital gold. We don't even need gold. We need to rebuild the economy like we're starting from scratch in a trustless, decentralized way. So this whole hype, this whole halving thing is just marketing hype. I mean, it's good for crypto, but really it's not going to really do anything. And once again, it's just a pure focus on price. The people that are screaming about the price of Bitcoin and not about the increased capabilities, the increased functions, the increased usability are wasting your time and they're wasting the direction and your attention. We need to be focused on what can we do? What can we build in crypto? What are the mechanisms that we can create or use to build a new digital economy in a trustless way, in a private way, in a way that's uncensorable? And Bitcoin's not doing that anymore. Once it does, I'll gladly support it, but it's not doing it. It's just hype. Having hype. After 4 years, now what? After May 11th or May 10th, whenever that block time comes and goes, then what? What? Who cares? I don't care. A lot of people think they care. Once you get on the other side of it, it's kind of like, what are you looking forward to? Taproot, we've been talking about for 2-3 years. Schnorr Signatures, 2-3 years. What else? Lightning Network, what, 4 or 5 years now? None of that stuff is ready. Rootstock or RSK, whatever it's called. That's not even native. Those aren't native smart contracts. You're relying on another protocol, another network. Just like Lightning Network is another network. Trash. So let's talk about some real networks that are actually trying to do something, building towards something. You know, let's talk about Ethereum. I'm not an Ethereum maximalist. I just like the network. I like that you can do things with the network. And, you know, the news last week is that they are slowly moving towards their, I think it's called, is it Schlesi? It's not a great name for Ethereum 2.0 testnet. It's Skelsey. I probably said it wrong. But Ethereum's going to proof of stake. And they're slowly plodding along, creating their test net. So the old one thing to keep in mind, Ethereum 1.0 isn't going away. It's going to exist in concert with Ethereum 2.0. It's going to be locking up Ethereum and then using that Ethereum to be a validator on what's called the beacon chain on the Ethereum 2.0. So they started the test net. And yeah, you could give Ethereum community shit for the same thing. Oh, you've been talking about it forever. I mean, they stated this back in 2014. The big difference is they've actually been developing software for this. And it's going to very quickly, I think, ramp up once it goes live. So I think we'll get to Ethereum 2.0 this year. And I think it's going to fundamentally change the game and how cryptocurrencies are looked at. You have miners that 50% of them are losing. They can go back and maybe mine for Ethereum, but then that's going to go away. So what's going to happen? Where are the miners going to go? I think you'll have a shift sort of in the crypto space about proof of stake and how that looks and what you can do with that. It'll be faster. It'll be nimble. Could there be bugs and stuff? Sure. But at least They're trying different things other than just peer-to-peer money. Because you can't build an economy on peer-to-peer money. Not at that with just that basic functionality. It's just not going to happen. So if we got to keep, you know, I'm going to start giving more detailed reports on what Ethereum's doing on setting up their testnet for ETH 2.0. But just really start looking out for that. I don't like talking about price, but I think people will be acquiring Ethereum to do staking. I think it's 32 Ethereum. I know it's 32 Ethereum to be a validator. That's a lot. Right now, that's like 6,400. That's a lot. But you can get into a pool and experience some return on that. So I think there's going to be a lot of pools. I'm sure like Trust Wallet will have something and probably Binance will have something. Another network. Charles Hoskinson did a, I like Charles, you know, as slow as Ethereum has been, Cardano's been even slower. And he gave an update on their Shelly network. I thought it was pretty funny, actually, because he just sort of was tired of people saying Shelly was never going to. So for those of you who don't know, Shelly's sort of like the phase two of Cardano. That's where they're turning on staking. Once again, you hear staking. So you have Ethereum, Cardano, staking. Tezos, staking. Cosmos, staking. That's where we're going. Proof of work has served this purpose, and it will continue on, but so did MySpace. MySpace is still up. That's all I'll say about that. So Cardano, ADA, you know, Hoskinson came out and, you know, people were mad. It looked like he was in some sort of sports car, so people wanted to give him shit for that. That guy's worked really hard. He was involved with Ethereum. Listen, I don't even own any Cardano. I just like the way this project has been very diligent, slow, methodical about how it's developed their network. And it's going to enable different sorts of business models, things that Ethereum can't even potentially do. The gap that that Cardano is going to have is they don't have sort of the mind share of the developers. like Ethereum has. They don't have the tools like Ethereum has, you know. So Ethereum has a leg up with developers and tools, but that can change over time. But I'm very excited about, once again, you can do validators for Cardano. He said without doubt that Shelly, which turns on staking and a host of other functionality for the network, for the Cardano network, is going to go live this year. So keep a lookout for Cardano. Keep a lookout for Tezos. This staking theme, which I was a year early, maybe even 2 years, I thought staking would like really, really take off in 2019. It didn't. Things are always slow. But I'm telling you that the shift to staking is going to change the narrative in crypto slowly but surely. Your Bitcoin maximalists, the big boys out there with the big names and the gals, will continue screaming about Bitcoin, but store value is not enough anymore. You're not going to build a digital trustless economy on store value. It's just not going to happen. It will not happen. Okay? You need a medium exchange, unit of account. And when I say unit of account, it essentially means that Ethereum is a unit of account in its network. ADA is a unit of account in its network. Bitcoin is a unit of account in its network. Right? So keep that in mind, right? When people talk about what's going to happen in the future, start trying to wrap your head around unit of account. That is at the core. So in a traditional world, the US dollar is unit of account, obviously in America, and really for most currencies, because most currencies are measured against the US dollar. But sooner or later, we're going to shift from what a specific cryptocurrency is worth in USD and more so what you can do with a cryptocurrency in that network, in that ecosystem. And then it's a unit of account for that network. And with the other technology implemented, it is also a store of value for that network and also a medium of exchange for that network. And then that network is going to let you do what? Use smart contracts, oracles, and governance to do what? Whatever the hell you want. Are we going to have bugs? Are there going to be failures? Yes. But we're going to learn from it and move forward. Some networks don't let you do anything but just move point A to point B. Maybe point A to point B, C, D, E, and E, and F. But not complex transactions. You're not going to build dApps on some networks. So let's really start thinking about the shift in a unit of account. And that ties back to what I was saying earlier about our national debt and what Republicans and Democrats, how they spend our money, and why NASDAQ is where it was in December or where it was in February, and we've lost 33 million jobs. The unit of account under which we live is trash. It is a severely flawed, abuse, and corrupt system that we need to start looking for alternatives for. And the only way you're going to really be able to even have that opportunity is if you take the time to learn about crypto and what's going on in this space and see how that all ties together with narratives, with propaganda from politicians, from the media that's on TV, and even within the cryptocurrency space where some people support coins that don't do anything. Coins that don't do anything and will not fundamentally change the way our economics work in this country. And this is not financial advice, but the one thing I'll tell you is start thinking about investing in things that can't be printed. When I say that, I'm talking hard assets. I'll even put precious metals there. I'd rather you buy gold than stocks, because at least gold has, while I don't believe it should be used as money, at minimum, it has a commodity purpose. So does silver. So does platinum. Crypto, major networks. You just can't print your own Ethereum. You can't print your own Litecoin. You can't print your own Bitcoin. You can't print your own Cardano. Cryptocurrencies are hard, quote unquote, digital assets. Think about land. Think about property. You can't print land. Precious metals, crypto, land, property. You can't print those things. We're headed towards a reality that we don't recognize yet, where a lot of things are going to get printed and inflated away. You want to own things that can't be printed and can't be conjured by a select few, a select group of people that don't care about your production and your time and your well-being fundamentally. And that goes for pretty much everyone in DC. Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. If we're going to talk about fundamental change, it's not just with changing the president or not just changing the Senate. It's changing the way we view you.